When I asked him to introduce himself, he stepped right up to the mic.
My name is Onofre Tafoya.
He actually prefers to be called Taffy. He spent many years working deep under the surface of the earth. He was a block cave miner for the San Manuel Underground Mine, northeast of Tucson. And after he retired, Tafoya wrote a book about his experiences in the mine. He says the name of his book, Mother Magma, is a reference to how the mine took care of him for decades. We interviewed Taffy at a Tucson book fair in late 2010. At age 81, he's out promoting his newest book. So far, he's written two books about working in the San Manuel mine. He says it's his way of honoring the role the mine played in his life. After all, it kept his family of nine fed for years. You can hear a shorter, excerpted version of this interview at azpublicmedia.org. A quick note, Mr. Tafoya uses adult language in parts of the interview. I started by asking him a simple introductory question about how he became a miner. His answer comprises the entirety of the interview.
I went to work in the mines in 1956, in the San Manuel mine in 1956, because I had so many kids. And from the time I got out of the Navy in 1947 until 1956, I had many, many jobs, but not enough to pay for all these kids. I couldn't support my kids until I went to work in the San Manuel mine. At that time, in 1956, I had been working in a brickyard in Phoenix. I'd worked there 5 years. And there was a good place to work. It was drudgery work, hard work, and paid very little, but that's all I could get. Then I heard they opened up the San Manuel mine. I left the brickyard on a vacation week. They give me a week's vacation, no pay. I left my wife and my kids in Phoenix. I went to a little Chinese store in the corner, and I told them, you give my wife anything she wants. I'll come back and I'll pay you. I went and I applied for a job. I got on right away at the San Manuel mine. For the first 2 weeks, until I got a check, I lived on the San Pedro River in the back of my car. I showered at the mine. I shaved at the mine. I washed my clothes at the mine. But I'd go sleep in my car. And I loved that work, working underground. It was really good. It was hard work, and it was dangerous work, but it was not the drudgery of the brickyard. And the pay was fantastic. I was getting over $1.25 an hour. I was working 6 days a week, so I got 8 hours overtime every week. I was making more money than I ever had made since I got married, or even in the Navy. In the Navy, I never got no pay anyway. They were just, I don't know, they paid about $92 a month or something like that. I forget what the doggone thing. But it was fantastic work. And what we were doing was working 1,400 feet underground on the first level. And on the different levels that we mined there over the years, we went down to the 22,600 foot level. And we were hoisting this ore body out of the ground and bringing it to the surface. To me, that was fantastic. It was fantastic to me that grown men, simple men like myself, could take a jackleg or a stoper, and we could drive tunnels right through solid rock for miles. People like me could do that. And then the type of mining that we did was block cave mining. You know what block cave mining is? You have the ore body underground like this. You have the surface. This ore body was, from the surface to the ore body was 700 feet of, we called it potato dirt, no ore. Then the ore body stretched 8,000 feet in this direction. It stretched about 3,000 feet thick, and we were going to go down. It stretched from the 1,400 foot level down to the 2,600 foot level, and we were going to take it in slices like this and hoist it to the surface. And we did it. We turned out to be the largest underground mine in the world. And we had the highest tonnages of any other mine in the world. And block caving means that you don't, you're thinking of mining as the guys go in there with pick and shovels, or they go in there and drill holes and blast. Then they load that ore and they take it and they hoist it out. No. What you do is you have this ore body, you go down at a certain level and you cut a cavity into it, a cavity that is as high as a man can stand. And luckily I'm a short guy, so I could function very well in these very low tunnels. We'd cut what we called an undercount. And then the mountain above us would start to fall like rain. Then we had other raises that take it to another level down below, and this rain would fall, boulders would rain down and fall in these holes. And you never had to blast them all. From then on, millions of tons above you would start breaking and falling down and falling into these transfer raises. And in those transfer raises, we could control it. Up here on top where we cut that cavity, right away it filled up with big rocks. And then we would go under and fall into these cavities. Then we would go underneath and take this ore and transfer it down where we could put it onto a train and haul it away. I'd have to have a map to show you, or my book to show you on something like this. But gravity was doing all the work. It was all gravity. Millions of tons falling down, grinding against itself. Sometimes it would grind itself into a talcum powder. Sometimes the boulders were as big as a house. And in between, from sand into rock, just bigger and bigger as a house. And we would force it into these transfer rays and load it into trains and hold it up from the ground. And it would do it itself. We didn't have to go up there and blast it to make it move. The weight coming down would force it into these transfer raises, and we would take it out. They would load in the transfer raises. That way we could interrupt the rain. With this rain of rocks, we could interrupt it and control it so that we had time to bring a train in down below and empty these transfer raises into these trains. Then we had to take that train and haul it to a shaft that was 3/4 mile away, because you can't build a shaft in this, where this subsidence of the earth. If you went up on top, you're going to watch the ground cave in like that. So nothing can be even close to that, because it's going to fall like this. Understand? So you have to go very far away. So it was necessary to haul this ore, thousands of tons, over to the shaft and hoist him to the surface. And that's the part I was involved in. It was my job to get my crews to get this ore out of these transfer raises into an ore train, down to the dump, dump the trains into big ore bins, then hoist it to the surface. And we did this round the clock. We never shut down. The whole 24 hours we were going, we tried to have enough muck into these pockets so that the people would come and go and the ore step hauling for the river. We could keep these skips going to the surface. Skips are what you would call ore buckets. You've seen it in ore buckets, they take it up. Our ore buckets held 22 tons. 22 tons. The skip itself, the bucket, weighed almost 20 tons. The cable that hauled it was 3/4 inch. It was so damn big that it was 2 1/4 inches big, hold it up out of the ground. We could move 22 tons of muck from 2,600 feet underground to the surface in a minute and a half. We had them double, the drum, the hoisting. I'm talking about the hoisting part of the mine now. You had one skip here and one skip here, this shaft. And this skip would be going down, and this one would be coming up. This one would be dumping up on top, and this one would be loading. It would only take about a minute for this one to dump, and even less, because it would just fall out. A minute for this one to load, automatically, no men, no, boom, 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 boom. These skips going up and down, round the clock, 24 hours. That's what made us the best mine in the world for block cave mining. Nobody could do it like we did it. To me, it was utterly fantastic that men, dumb bricklayers like me, dumb, could do this. It took engineers to engineer it up, but the engineers couldn't do it without men like me. They had to have my kind of labor to operate this, load the trains, and drive all these tunnels. That was fantastic. The other thing I found about the mine, that there was a very big equalizer of people. Here you had going down every 8 hours, you had to change out the crew. Every 8 hours, state law says you wouldn't want to command underground for more than 8 hours. So every 8 hours you had to change out. From collar being the top of the shaft, you started it at 8 o'clock in the morning, and he went down, went to his working place. You had to have him back up by 4 o'clock, 8 hours only. And it worked around the three shifts like that. You know what I mean? 8 hour shifts, something like that. Hundreds of men going down each time. We had cages. Our cages held 100 men. We could lower 100 men in 2.5 minutes down to the level. It took more to get them onto the cage and off. On a cold winter day, very easy to get them onto the cage. Man, they were freezing to death. They wanted to get underground where it was nice and warm. And the same thing coming out. When you're coming out, you're all covered with sweat, you know, and mud and water, and colder than hell. And so you want to get out in a goddamn hurry. But the equalizing part was that the miners going to work look exactly the same. You can't tell if that's the general manager or an engineer or some big shot, or it's me, a stupid shoe tapper, you know what I mean? You couldn't tell the difference. We're dressed in work clothes. We're all wearing the same belt. We're all wearing the same hat. We're all wearing the same light. It was a tremendous equalizer. And what was so fantastic about the San Manuel mine was that they didn't give a shit what you wore. If you were black, white, Negro, Indian, woman, man, or if you were both, they didn't give a shit. As long as you could do the work and you would do it. That was the best thing about the whole damn mine. I never went to school. I never got past the 7th grade. I joined the Navy. So I have no formal education. But the mine didn't give a goddamn. Every man was judged by how good he was at his job. We had people that were crippled. I remember old Lockhart there. Hell, he'd walk around. Didn't give a shit. If he would do the best he could, he was good enough. I get emotional because I felt this. For 38 years I've felt this thing, this about this mine. Because my children, once I got a job in the San Manuel mine, my children never went to bed hungry. Fantastic. Fantastic. And it changed me. I was as good as any man there. And that's why I write these books. And so many, I got promoted. I started at the entry level. Stupidest one of the people you ever saw. I've never worked underground before. I worked my way up to general mine, not general mine foreman, general haulage foreman. I was in charge of all them shafts that took the ore in and out. I was in charge of all the trains on all the levels, in charge of all the transfer raises, getting it out of that transfer raises from the upper part down to the lower part, loaded in the train, hoisted it to the surface. That was my area. That was what I was the general foreman of. I was the general foreman there, I think, for about 13, 14 years. I was a shift foreman in charge of one of the, they had four shifts, four groups, four that took over this mine. I was in charge of, I was a shift foreman there for, for about 10, 12 years. I forget the figures right now, I gotta hear what it was. But this mine promoted me. The first 9 years, and when I was in the Navy, I was one of the most stupid people in the world. I couldn't make enough to feed my kids. I've become a man at the San Manuel Mine. And not only that, but there are hundreds of people like me. My name is, the name of my book is Mother Magma. You know why Mother? Because the Mexican people know, the Mexican people knew that once you got on and you established yourself as a good hard worker, the mine, the magma mine become your mother. Magma mine to each one of us was a big chichi. You know a chichi? Once you got a hold of a big chichi at Mother Magma, you were set for life. San Manuel Mine has, in the short period that it lasted, had more four-generation miners. I worked there, my sons worked there, my grandsons worked there, three generations worked there. I have many friends, four and five generations worked there. I worked there 38 years. My brother worked 40 years. I have friends that work 45 years there. Once you got a hold of that chichi, you were set for life. It's fantastic. The state of Arizona was a very prejudiced state against the Spanish people and the black people. In the early years, in the 20s, I wasn't born until 29, but in the 20s and in the 30s, and even into the 40s, it started to change. But Arizona, the only industries in Arizona was the mines, the railroads, and agriculture. All three of these major things from the 1800s up into the 1900s, these three, agriculture, mining, and railroad. And all three of them are prejudiced industries. They paid the Mexican miners $1 less than the white all the time. They did this thing everywhere in all the industries. It wasn't till the Second World War where Mexicans like me, when we come back, no more. You have to pay us same. And it worked. The world changed in many ways for me in the 1940s. And I'm not alone in these. I'm not alone. I can. My brother for one. I had another brother work there too. He died of cancer very early. He didn't get to work there but about 15 years, something like that. But I'm not alone in what I'm just telling you and in the emotions I'm demonstrating here. There are lots of people. I'm surprised that more people haven't written books about this mine, you know what I mean? There is a tremendous bond about all of us that worked in this mine. there's a bond between all the miners all over the world. Just recently, these guys down in Chile, those 33 miners, looks like that. I watched that. I was aware of it. And I watched that on the day my I was going to getting ready to go to bed. And my daughter called me. I go to bed at 8:30. And my daughter called me and she says, get on the cover. They're starting to bring the men out. When that first man hit the surface, I cried. I cried tears of joy. Fantastic. I can't control my emotions. I cannot. But that's who I am. Because I think of myself as I'm not a miner. I'm a provider for a wife and 8 kids, 9 now. They've all grown up and gone, but that was my function. I was a miner. I'm not a miner. I was a provider and I was a protector. That's all I have.